Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book. The New Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins revisits and expands the author's earlier account of how large-scale development deals can be used to shape the politics and economies of other nations. Drawing on Perkins's public claims about his work as a consultant, the book describes a system in which ambitious infrastructure projects, optimistic forecasts, and heavy borrowing can place countries into long-term dependency. It also connects these practices to the interests of multinational corporations, financial institutions, and strategic foreign policy goals. In this updated edition, Perkins broadens the lens beyond earlier Cold War era examples, arguing that similar dynamics continue under new forms in a globalized economy. The narrative blends memoir elements with political and economic commentary, aiming to make complex power structures understandable to non-specialists. Whether readers approach it as insider testimony, a critique of international development, or a provocation to investigate further, the book invites scrutiny of how debt, influence, and corporate incentives can shape national destinies. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the economic hitman framework and how influence is built. A central topic is Perkins's description of the economic hitman idea, a role he presents as a consultant who helped persuade leaders in developing countries to accept large loans for ambitious projects. The influence mechanism is portrayed as indirect rather than open coercion. The leverage comes from carefully crafted proposals, attractive projections of growth, and the promise of modernization. Once a government commits to loans it struggles to repay, the creditor side can gain bargaining power over policy choices, strategic resources, or geopolitical alignment. In the book's framing, this is not a conspiracy requiring perfect coordination, but a system where incentives align across engineering firms, contractors, banks, and political actors. Projects can still be real and sometimes beneficial, yet the financial architecture can tilt outcomes toward outside stakeholders. Perkins emphasizes the psychological dimension as much as the financial one. Prestige, fear of missing progress, and pressure from advisors can all push leaders toward risky commitments. This topic sets the stage for the rest of the narrative by defining the methods, the motivations, and the long-term consequences that allegedly follow when development is packaged primarily as debt-driven growth. Secondly, debt as a tool of dependence and policy steering, another major theme is the way sovereign debt can become a durable instrument of influence. Perkins argues that when countries take on large external obligations, repayment priorities can crowd out domestic needs and limit political freedom. In this view, debt is not merely a financial outcome, but a strategic lever that can steer policy, privatization decisions, and international voting behavior. The book highlights how contract structures, interest, and currency risk can magnify the burden, especially when growth projections miss their targets. Even when infrastructure is built, benefits may be unevenly distributed, with elites and foreign contractors gaining more than average citizens. Perkins also links debt stress to austerity measures, social unrest, and a reduced capacity to invest in health, education, and local enterprise. Importantly, the book frames this as a recurring pattern rather than a rare failure, suggesting that the system rewards deal volume and geopolitical advantage more than long-term national resilience. Readers are encouraged to consider how loan negotiations, consultancy reports, and development narratives can mask asymmetric risk, leaving the borrower exposed while lenders and contractors are protected through guarantees and political support. Thirdly, infrastructure megaprojects, projections, and who really benefits. Perkins spends substantial attention on the development playbook centered on big infrastructure, dams, power plants, highways, ports, and urban modernization. These projects carry powerful symbolism and can deliver real capacity, but the book questions the assumptions behind them and the distribution of gains. A key focus is the role of forecasting, particularly optimistic demand estimates and GDP growth scenarios that can justify oversized borrowing. When projections are inflated, the resulting project may be underutilized, while the debt remains fully real. Perkins argues that the largest winners are often construction and engineering firms, consultancies, and suppliers, many of which are based in wealthier nations and are paid from the borrowed funds. Local benefits, in his telling, can be concentrated among politically connected groups rather than broadly shared, while communities may bear environmental and social costs such as displacement or disrupted livelihoods. The topic also raises practical questions about alternative development paths, smaller, distributed investments, local capacity building, and projects chosen for social return rather than headline size. Even readers who dispute the author's conclusions may find value in the caution about incentives that favor scale and speed over long-term suitability. Fourthly, geopolitics, corporate power, and the modernized system, The updated framing explores how economic influence operates in a world shaped by globalization, privatization, and complex supply chains. Perkins connects development finance to geopolitical goals, suggesting that economic arrangements can secure access to resources, military cooperation, or diplomatic alignment without overt intervention. Corporate power is depicted as operating alongside states rather than replacing them, with public institutions, private contractors, and international lenders reinforcing each other through shared interests. The book also suggests that the tools have evolved. Beyond bilateral loans, influence can be exerted through multinational institutions, trade agreements, privatized utilities, and investment flows that reward compliance with certain policy frameworks. Another aspect is the role of narratives. How modernization and free market promises can be used to define what is realistic or responsible, narrowing political options. Perkins argues that this creates a system of soft control that is harder to see and therefore harder to resist. The topic is not only about external actors, but also about domestic elites who may benefit from alignment. By emphasizing modern mechanisms, the book seeks to show continuity with earlier patterns while acknowledging that the players and channels of influence can change over time. Lastly, ethics, accountability, and what individuals can do, a final topic is the moral and civic challenge posed by the system the author describes. Perkins presents his story as a warning and a call to examine how everyday economic choices connect to international outcomes. The book discusses accountability at multiple levels: professional ethics in consulting and finance, corporate responsibility for environmental and social impacts, and governmental oversight of foreign policy and aid. It also highlights the difficulty of reform when incentives reward short-term profits, political wins, and deal-making. Rather than limiting responsibility to distant institutions, the narrative often points to citizens, consumers, and investors as participants in a broader economic ecosystem. Readers are encouraged to pay attention to where money flows, how pension funds and banks invest, and how public narratives justify certain projects and alliances. While the book does not function as a technical manual, it frames awareness as a first step toward change, followed by civic engagement and support for transparency. The emphasis is on recognizing patterns of manipulation, questioning official optimism, and valuing development models that prioritize local needs, resilience, and equitable outcomes over prestige projects and extractive arrangements. In conclusion, this book best serves readers who want a provocative, accessible lens on how international finance, development projects, and geopolitical priorities can intersect. It will appeal to general audiences interested in global politics, economics, and corporate influence, as well as students and professionals who want a narrative counterpoint to official development success stories. The main life benefit is sharper critical thinking. Readers are pushed to question who profits from large loans, what assumptions sit behind glowing forecasts, and how debt can shape a country's policy choices for decades. Even if a reader approaches Perkins's account skeptically, the book can still improve media literacy by highlighting incentives that encourage overly optimistic projections and unequal risk sharing. Compared with many books on development and foreign policy that rely on abstract theory, this one is written to be memorable and personal, using an insider style to keep attention on real-world mechanisms like contracts, consultants, and project pipelines. That makes it a compelling purchase for people who want an engaging gateway into deeper research. It can also complement more academic works by raising questions those works can help verify and contextualize. If you want a readable, forceful critique of debt-driven development and the power structures around it, this book stands out for its narrative urgency and its challenge to conventional assumptions. If you would like to support John Perkins, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.